Goedemorgen en welkom aan Taproom Talks van Lakewood.
Craig, you need to flip his switch. He's stuck in.
Reset his language. I'm sorry.
Put him back in English.
What is going on over here?
I'm sorry. We're talking with Belgian guys.
Welcome in. That's the extent of what I know.
That's German.
That's all I know of Dutch.
Yeah.
You know nothing.
Seems the world don't turn as fast as it once did. The days are slow and the nights are long.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Taproom Talks. I'm Wim Benz, founder of Lakewood Brewing Company. In the studio with me, as always, are Craig and Zach, our creative team. And on the phone this morning, we have two giant big hitters of the brewing industry who also happen to be two Belgian guys, Peter Bockart from New Belgium Brewing and Stephen Powles from Boulevard Brewing. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
So we're going to talk about beer this morning. We're going to talk about Belgian beer this morning, because if it's one thing that us Belgian guys know, it's how to drink beer. So it just happens that the two guys on the line this morning happen to brew exquisite Belgian beers, not just Belgian beers, but all types of beers, all different styles. So we're just going to talk about how you guys got into the industry, you know, where your passion for beer lies. So let's start with Peter. Peter, tell us a little bit about how you got into beer and then into American craft beer.
Into beer, I studied in the University of Ghent for brewing, fermentation science. And then I worked a stint in some in Alkmaar, Kronenboer, who was based in Zolte, the specialty brewery for the group at that point. And then moved to Rodenbach in when the heck was that, 87 or something. And then during Rodenbach, I started my own brew pub, De Zwingel, in Harelbeke, close to Kortrijk. And then after that, in 96, I moved to Fort Collins, Colorado, to join New Belgium, and I've been there ever since.
Was there an ad in the paper that said, hey, we're looking for a Belgian brewer to come to Colorado to brew beer? How did that all come about?
Yeah, the local newspaper, the Coloradian, had a job posted, and I read it every day, you know. I met Kim and Jeff in the Craft Brewers Conference in Boston. We were invited with two Belgian brewers to talk about Belgian beer, because in 96 there wasn't really much about Belgian beer. There was a guy in Texas, Pierre Celis, mm-hmm. And there was New Belgium, and maybe there were a few people who had a triple left and right, but there wasn't really much at all. New Belgium kind of wanted to promote that, and so they flew in two Belgians to talk at the Craft Brewers Conference. Afterwards, we had dinner, and then I jumped in a car, drove with my wife to Fort Collins, Colorado. There were mountains there, and there was a cute small brewery still at that point that needed a lot of help, and I was pretty convinced that that could be a fun place to live.
Yeah, not a whole lot of mountains in Belgium. A lot of flatness in Belgium. What size was New Belgium when you started there?
New Belgium, in the first year I was there, so in 96, we did around 50,000 barrels. So we had just moved to the current site and had moved to a 100-barrel system, but we only had 10 fermenters at that point of 300 barrels, say, as such. Yeah, we just had bought a larger bottle line, and we had a kegging line. It was very tiny. It was a pretty decent size, but it was squeezed all on a very small surface, just because it was a huge expansion to pay for.
Well, yeah, 50,000 barrels is nothing to sneeze at. considering where New Belgium is now.
We're hovering around a million barrels right now.
Hey-o. That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, so Steven, same question. How did it all happen?
Well, yeah, I saw an ad in the Kansas City Star, same as
Peter. Oh, cool.
So my dad worked in a brewery, and so when I was in high school, I needed, just like everybody in high school, I needed a lot of money, and so I started working in the local brewery. It was called Kruger. I just started, I think my first job at the brewery was at the infeed of the, you know, they reuse bottles there, and so they want to use the green bottles, they only need the brown bottles, and there was no automation, so I had to pick out the broken bottles, the green bottles, out of the crates, and it was middle of summer, it was, you know, 80 degrees, and there was mold, and it was just stinky then. was crazy. It was a, I mean, I don't know how these guys could do that job. I was, so it was an awful first experience, but I just, next, the following year, I just went back and I did that for a couple of years. And so there was this guy, this brewmaster running around, you know, with his lab coat on, telling people what to do and, you know, drink beer all day. I'm like, wow, that's something that I want to do. I think I can live that life. So I went off to college, and like Peter, I went to also to Ghent, different school, but also in Ghent for engineering, brewing engineering. And then after that, I ended up at a brew pub in Leuven for a couple of years. And then I went to Riva, which was a group of small breweries, of which Leafman's was part of. And then I saw the ad in the Kansas City Star, and so that Boulevard was looking for a brewer. Actually, I saw it in, when I was in Leuven, I saw it while I was doing sensory at the university there. And so I applied for the job, and John McDonald, the owner, they didn't reply, and then I wrote them, I think in those days it was still faxes, or it could have been like one of the first emails where you had to log on, you know, through your telephone line. And I send it to, and then I send an email to John or fax, and I said, like, hey, look at what Peter Bouchard is doing in New Belgium. I think he's very successful. You should rethink that Belgian brewer. And the next day he called me back. So, Peter, this is all you. I'm here because, you know, because how good your work was at New Belgium. I probably never told you that, but now you know.
That's funny. When was it that you moved? It was a couple of years after me, huh?
Yeah, in 99.
99, yeah.
So we're both very, very young people, as you can, if you do the math.
Of course, you both started at the age of 12 or 13 at your breweries. And
exactly.
Child prodigies, right?
That's it.
So how big was Boulevard when you started there?
I think they were like 35,000 barrels or something like that.
Okay. So also pretty decent-sized brewery.
Yeah, yeah. They were still the original 35-barrel brew house. It was interesting, you know, not that many fermenters. They just put in a new cellar that was designed by somebody, by, you know, stainless steel manufacturer, and you could see he put in as much stainless steel as he could. And I remember talking to John, like, why would you need all these plates and all these couple of boards and stuff? I'm like, well, that's what they designed, and I really liked it. I'm like, well, they really made you pay for all this. So I don't know if he started off good, but that's that was my first input.
But it looks good, you know. It's stainless is very pretty.
Shiny.
Yeah, nice and shiny. Yeah.
Very slick.
All right, guys, it's time for a little break. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk about new releases coming up.
When I look back, I wonder if I had it to do again, would I straighten up?
So we have some new beers coming out in August. You will see the return of Punkel. Punkel is our pumpkin pie spiced German Dunkel. So it is a dark lager. It is the darker half stepchild, sister, cousin,
brother cousin
of lager. So it's take Lakewood lager, make it a little bit darker, and then what we do is we spice it up with pumpkin pie spices. There actually is no pumpkin in our Punkel. But everything that makes a pumpkin pie taste like a pumpkin pie is in this beer. So we have cinnamon,
allspice, ginger,
nutmeg, allspice, ginger, all the things that make pumpkin pie so ding-dang yummy. So that'll be coming out August 1st, because nothing says fall like August 1st in Texas.
Yeah.
In August, we need hope. If pumpkin beers show up.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe it'll cool off. Maybe it'll cool off. Maybe it'll freeze this year. Who knows?
It'll never freeze. It'll never cool.
Winter is not coming.
Never. What else do we got coming out?
Oh, God. Mic check, Craig. We also have Lion Share 4 coming out. Lion Share 4!
Yay.
Lion Share 4!
Yeah.
Lion Share 4!
Woo!
So Lion Share 4 is coming out. Everyone's very excited about it, especially Zach. So Lion Share is our anniversary beer. We do it every year, and every year it's a different beer. This year is our fourth anniversary, and we will be putting out a Belgian quad, because what says four better than quad? It's a Belgian quad, very true to style, boozy, complex, Belgian candy sugar, awesomeness, and we put it in a, drum roll please.
Drum roll noise.
Thank you. We put it in a brandy barrel. Does everyone know what brandy is?
Brandy and Moesha?
Cool. All right. Good. Yep. Glad we got that covered.
Brandy
barrels start as bourbon barrels. Then they contain fortified wine, i.e. brandy. And then we put beer in it. It's tasting really, really good right now. I just had a sample last week.
What's the ABV?
We're very excited. ABV is 12.4.
Mm-hmm.
That's big time.
That's a beast.
So that'll be out for the anniversary. And this is the first year that we will be putting that beer in bottles. So get to know your beer buyer at your local grocery store or liquor store really well.
Butter them up real good.
Butter them up real good between now and the first week of August. Get ready. You know, obviously you guys had an upbringing in Belgium and were part of that beer culture. And the beer culture in Belgium is very much part of the overall culture of the country. You know, and I think a lot of Belgians kind of take it for granted that there's this amazing beer culture and there are these amazing beer styles that are extremely unique to the region and to Belgium itself. You know, let's just do an easy question. I mean, what's the beer that you had when you were growing up and said, wow, that's really neat. That's really cool. I want to make that.
My first beer was a Rodemba.
Oh,
then I had, yeah.
That's a good first beer.
It's kind of funny. I grew up in the area, and so Rodemba was very popular in that area, and it was on tap everywhere. It was an easy, accessible beer for younger people, I think, at that point. Mm-hmm. Somewhat sour, somewhat sweet, not too high in alcohol. You could drink it all night and be feel at ease. And so for me, my first beer was a Rodemba.
My first beer was the beer they brewed in Kruger, and it was Jupiler because it was owned by Interbrew. But I mean, officially, I have to say my first beer is Duvel. Mm-hmm. And I don't get in trouble, you know. So I follow the guidelines from our bosses in Belgium now.
There you go. Well, I don't have any Belgian bosses yet, so my first beer, you know, the first beer that I can remember, and, you know, you guys kind of chime in on this, too. I remember, so we moved to the U.S. when I was 7, so that was in 85, and we'd go back every year, every summer, and, you know, spend time at my grandma's house, and I remember there being a table beer that was specifically, I don't know if it was specifically, because my memory might be a little bit fuzzy, but I remember there being a Kinderbier, so a beer made for kids. So it was low ABV. It was very sweet, at least what I remember. Do you guys remember anything like that from Belgium?
Yeah, of course. When we were in high school, at noon, there was always the table beer on the table. That was the Pier Buff at that point. But the first brewery I worked in Zulte, we made 4 different table beers, 2 dark versions, 2 pale versions. Every time a sweeter and a more bitter version.
Steven, do you remember that?
Yeah, we used to make it also. We used to make it at that brewery, so we all have that. And yeah, I used to go home for lunch when I was a kid, you know, when I probably was like maybe 8 or 10 years old on my little bike, and then my mom would have lunch ready, and there was always a glass of table beer ready.
See, that's the shit that you don't get in the U.S., right?
I feel like I've missed so much.
My childhood is wasted.
Ruined.
But it doesn't really quantify as beer. That's why we don't refer to it as our first beer. It was only 2.1% alcohol or something. So that was like the Coca-Cola or whatever. We didn't really have Coca-Cola. We had table beer, you know?
Yeah. So, that's my first experience with beer was table beer. And then, you know, going back, since the drinking age in Belgium is, like I say, more of a suggestion than a rule. You know, in my tweens and early teens, we'd sneak out and go to a bar and, you know, buy whatever was on tap. And it was, it was probably a Maas Pils or a Jupiler or something like that. And Pintje. So a small 33 centiliter, and that's a form of measurement,
yeah,
Zach.
Okay,
Zach's
you.
Looking at me going, what's a centiliter?
Metrics.
What is 6 ounces, roughly?
Okay.
6 ounces of yummy beer, and that's one of our beers is actually made after that experience in my childhood. I always wanted to make something that reminded me of summers in Belgium, and that's where our summer seasonal, Zomer Pils, was crafted after. So it's literally an interpretation of my childhood in a can.
You haven't made a table beer yet?
No, I know. We need to.
I proposed it to Charlie Papazian a while back to get a table beer category, and I believe there was in the World Cup a few years a table beer category, but there was never a beer in it. But it was kind of in a hope to revive that a bit in Belgium, mm-hmm. but I think it's close to dead table beer right now.
Yeah, they really frown upon marketing to kids now.
But the whole low ABV thing is getting really popular now. It's session beers and things like that. I could see table beers taking off. Absolutely.
I do too. You know, Jester King here in Texas, their Petite Prince, I think, is under 3%.
It's like 2.5 or something like that.
Yeah. And that's super drinkable.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you, Peter. I say let's get back at it and make some beer for the kids. You know, it's all about the kids.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back in just a minute. We're going to talk about our events calendar, and we'll be right back with Peter and Steve. All right, here's Craig with the events that we have coming up this month.
Yeah, we got a big lineup coming up this Wednesday night at Victory Tavern. We are doing a beer dinner with those guys, so come on out to that. Should be a good time. We're doing a few beer tastings and pint nights at Spin Neapolitan Pizzas. We're doing one on SMU Boulevard on Thursday, the 14th. We are going to be at Alamo Draft House up there in Richardson for Hopped Up Cinema featuring All Call, and we are going to be screening Hot Fuzz, the classic Hot Fuzz out there. That's going to be on July 26th. July 28th, we are going to be at the Hooters in Addison doing an All Call pint night and a Guns N' Hoses fundraiser with our buddies from Guns N' Hoses, so come on out to that. Then in August, we are going to be at the House of Blues for Local Brews, Local Grooves, August 6th. So come out and check us out. A lot of indie music and, of course, lots of good craft beer. For all of our fans that listen to us up there in Amarillo, we are going to be at the Craft Beer Fest that you guys are having on August 20th. So come on out and see us there. And then on August 21st, that Sunday, we are going to also be doing a Keep the Glass of our Lion's Share 4 glasses at our tap room. So make sure you hit that up. With that being said, you can always check our events calendar and keep up to date with all of the latest and greatest. And, of course, I would be remiss without leaving out the most important event coming up, and that would be our anniversary on July 30th. And at Good Friend, we're doing it all over again on July 31st. So we're going to be right back with more details on that. And I'm losing control with that Kentucky gold and the
Tennessee brown. So I want to ask you both, why do you think Belgium is such a hub of brewing quality? And not just, you know, not just historically, but culturally. If you guys can kind of talk about why you think that came to be.
We don't really know what happened 100 years ago. to me, I've been surprised about how short really the history is on the beers that we have currently in Belgium. It used to be plenty of low-alcohol beer that people were drinking day and night just because the water was bad. And Randy Mosher gave me some stuff from 1880 to 1904, where I was talking about the English looking to Belgium because it was such an interesting brewing culture, because they made such a good low ABV beer. And the English wanted to copy that because there was way more money to, and the English have copied it, and the Belgians walked away, I guess, and they started making high alcohol beer.
That's interesting. So all the bitter milds and everything that you find in England are maybe a little bit of a copy of what Belgium was doing early, and then they said, well, if the English are doing it, we should do it better.
Mm-hmm. The taxation law changed in 1904, I think, in England, and so that's why it came. But if you look at the beer like Duvel or something, I think Stephen maybe knows better, but it's only been created in 86 or, no, earlier.
Yeah, I think it was created after World War One, or something like that, right? Or World War II, okay. sorry. World War II. I think it was like a victory beer or something. I don't know. I have to read. But originally it was a dark beer, and then they made it paler and paler and paler. But there is the original yeast is an English yeast strain. So is Rodenbach, right? Rodenbach was somewhat connected.
Yeah, Rodenbach goes back. There was one of the, I think Eugène Rodenbach went to England, and he brought a kiln back there. You still can find it on the... And he also started working with Fooders because of the porters were a Fooder beer, and with that stronger beer that was used to be brewed in England, but it was probably partly sour also. And that porter blending from young and older beer is what Rodenbach really became. So modeled after an English beer. But as you can see, we're pretty young, and we don't know.
Right, of course.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're just guessing right now.
Right. I mean, you're in your early 30s. You know, you guys just haven't been around that long.
No. I think somebody, I think my grandpa also told me that it has to do with the influx of different cultures to the country, because Belgium is a very young country also. It's only since 1832. So it's actually younger than the U.S. And so it was always different cultures passing by. The Spaniards were there, the Dutch were there, the French, the English, the Germans, the Turks. I mean, I think all these different cultures brought something, and of all these different cultures, something stuck. So that's why I think there's a lot of spices in Belgian beer. There's all kinds of stuff. I think Orval was, the first brewmaster of Orval was a German, right? Wasn't that right, Peter?
I don't know that.
I think so. I think Jean-Marie told me that once, and then I don't know where the Brettanomyces came from, but I think Jean-Marie told me that the first brewer or monk that brewed there was a German. So there's influences from everywhere.
Yeah.
I guess.
Being that Antwerp is such a large port city, you know, Belgium was at the end of the spice trade. I mean, it was coming all the way across from Asia, and then through the Middle East, and then through Western Europe, and then into Eastern Europe. So you know, I think we definitely see that interesting spice influence on Belgian beers. You know, not just coriander, but orange peel, and you know, oranges don't really grow in Belgium, but they sure end up through the country, through one trading channel or another. So it is neat to see how Belgian brewers not only used indigenous ingredients like beet sugar to fortify beers and to increase the alcohol, but to, you know, to use the spices that came through Belgium too, historically, to that influenced the beer as well.
Go ahead. That sugar thing is interesting, I think, because the port of Antwerp, well, cane sugar came in there, and by the time it got to the port of Antwerp, it was fermenting. So they couldn't do anything else except then boil it, and that's how candy sugar got it. That's how they came to make candy sugar.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's another story.
That's interesting. Yeah. I thought the whole sugar thing was a local Belgian thing, because sugar, you know, sugar beets and things like that. I thought that's where that sugar came from.
Yeah, when they were short on beets, and they came in the port, and it was warm and humid, and it started fermenting, and the only thing it could clarify was boiling it.
Right.
And then they put the strings in it, and then it would crystallize on the strings, and that's how they made the candy sugar.
That's awesome. That reminds me of my third grade science class, where we made rock candy.
Yeah, we just graduated from third grade. Peter.
Right, right. I think you're regressing.
Yeah,
you're getting younger
Benjamin
and younger.
Benjamin Buttons.
Yeah, it's Benjamin Buttons.
But Peter had something important to say. Sorry, I interrupted Peter.
Yeah, but for me, Belgian beer culture, it's almost the reverse. When I started in New Belgium, they had T-shirts and hats, and we had we had pint glasses with different logos on, but it was only then that you really realize in Belgium that whatever beer you order, you get the right glass.
Yeah.
And that it's so common, you don't even think about it. And then you came into New Belgium, and like, oh, there's T-shirts and hats. And another beer in another pint glass. Okay, great. Yeah, for me, that struck me more in that way, coming to the U.S., that it you suddenly see what you don't see in your day-to-day life in Belgium.
Do you think now that U.S. craft brewing is such a global force, have you seen American influence going back to Belgium, and how maybe Belgian brewing is changing, or how brewers in Belgium are, you know, adjusting their lineup? What do you think is the American influence on Belgium now, since the roles have kind of reversed a little bit?
I think Steven now is exporting to Belgium, but you see IPAs, and recently Rodenbach recreated Alexander beer that we were making when I was there, and it was really more based on the American market asking for that beer. It's relatively small, I would say, the impact right now, because the IPAs created there are somewhat timid on the hopping compared to what we currently do here in the U.S. But we definitely have an influence on what's happening in Belgium.
Yeah, I agree with Peter. I think when I came over here, it was like, wow, a Belgian brewmaster, you know. This guy knows a lot, and probably Peter, for Peter, the same thing. And now you go back to Belgium, and they go like, wow, you brew in the U.S. You know, you guys make all these crazy styles and all these crazy beers and all these, you know, you guys just go all out. Where back 15 years ago, it was the opposite way. In the U.S., they would think like, oh, you're from Belgium. You guys do all these crazy things, and now it's vice versa. And there is definitely a lot of requests for U.S. beers, U.S. craft beers in the Europe now. It's growing, and it's growing all over the world. You know, you travel anywhere, and brew pubs or small breweries are popping up everywhere. It's South America, Asia, you know it. It's happening everywhere. So, mm-hmm. And I think the U.S. is just ahead of the game when it comes to that. Of course, Belgium has a big tradition. Not easy there because they, I mean, for a Belgian, Belgian beer is the best in the world.
Yeah.
If you think about Belgium, where it's a small market, but 30% of the market is specialty beer. That's kind of huge, and I don't think that's anywhere else in the world that such a high percentage of it is non-pills.
But it's not light beer.
It's not. It's definitely not.
And that's a difference.
No, and that, you know, I think that is a difference. I mean, I think you can take the worst Belgian mass-produced beer and put it up against the best mass-produced American beer, and I think the Belgian beer still might come out on top. Is it because the Belgian mass produced beers are using less adjuncts, do you think, or do you, is it, I mean, how do you guys explain that? At least that's my impression. I don't know if you guys have the same impression, but at least that's my impression.
What struck me coming to New Belgium was we were making a triple with 100% malt. In a way, that's kind of stupid, you know. There's way too much protein that you bring into the beer. There's way too much. If you're a chef, you don't limit yourself to certain guidelines. You're going to create beauty. At Rodenbach, we were using some corn grits because we wanted to dilute also the protein level, although it wasn't that heavy of a beer. Belgians, I think, are pretty no-nonsense brewers. They're like, hey, look, this is what I want to make. That's how I'm going to get there. It strikes me how people overthink sometimes the beers here. When I went the first time to the JBF, my third day in the U.S., you get 1 ounce of sample, and your 1 ounce is already long gone, and the brewer is still talking on how he made that beer. You're like, okay, yeah, come on, where's the rest of my beer here? I don't know if that answers the question, but for me it struck me that why would you use 100% malt? Oh, because we're kind of against the big guys, and who they use too much adjunct, so we're not going to use any adjunct. Funny.
Fair enough. So the third day that you were in the U.S., you went to GABF?
Yeah. Kim and Jeff said there was a beer festival in Denver that we had to do that weekend, so let's go to Denver. And I was totally surprised how big this thing was. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
That's pretty amazing. Jet lagged and going jet lagged at altitude and going to a beer festival. Yeah. That's dedication.
Steven, do you want to add something or?
But I think you're right about those adjuncts. And you know, these big mass produced light beers. You know, I think we all as brewers have a love-hate relationship with them because I envy those guys how consistent they can make these beers. But on the other hand, I mean, it's just not much to them. So there's really any mistake shows, and they really control their processes to not show any off flavor. So I envy those guys for that. I think you can kind of see it in about everything. If you compare coffee in Europe or coffee here, or the mass-produced coffee, I mean, it's just a little bit better over there. And the same with chocolate, and the same with a lot of different things, you know, food. But I think that's the whole thing where craft beer is really fitted in, because it's a whole movement of better, more flavorful, local, you know, all those things are all, comprehend all that in this big movement that craft beer is just a part of it. And, I mean, I think the whole idea was to go back to what they have in Europe, but now it's kind of succeeding what's happening in Europe, and that's kind of how I look at it. my philosophical here at 9:45 in the morning. We haven't been drinking yet. I haven't been drinking yet.
Yeah, so sorry. Okay. Yeah, we're definitely drinking. So we're full disclosure. Full disclosure, we're having Boulevard Imperial Stout 2011 vintage for breakfast this morning.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
It's delicious.
It is very good. Yeah, no, it tastes great.
Wow.
It tastes great. It's out of a styrofoam cup, unfortunately, but it does taste awesome.
Well,
but they are branded. I think they are branded Boulevard styrofoam cups, so I think we're okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's even worse.
We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be right back with Stephen Powles and Peter Bokart.
I want to thank Justin Pickard for the use of his song, Tennessee Brown, off the album High Price for the Low Life. If you want to support the artist, you can check him out at justinpickard.com. That's Justin, P-I-C-K-A-R-D. Or you can see him live as part of our day one celebration for our 4th anniversary Get Down. If you want to see the whole lineup, you can check it out on liquidbrewing.com. Or stay tuned, as we'll be talking about it real soon. Now it's too
late to carry on. I get a lot of questions about, you know, what is the next big thing in brewing? And, you know, none of us have a crystal ball. I couldn't have told you what the industry was going to do when we opened up 4 years ago. But it's been a very interesting ride just to kind of see where the American palate is evolving. And not just on across the U.S., but on a local level, too, because we're in a market that's very, very new to craft beer. 4 years ago, there were no breweries in Dallas County, and now we're pushing 30 breweries with, you know, in the Metroplex. So it's been explosive growth here. But we do have an audience that has a very young palate, and I think tastes are evolving. Obviously, you guys have a much broader reach and a much bigger market. Where do you guys see beer trending?
For me, maybe two things. I think the long tail is just getting longer. There was a book, The Long Tail, that talks about product differentiation, and that I don't remember exactly the words, but it's always the same. 20% of the beers is going to be 80% of the market, or it's even smaller in beer. We see our consumers asking for what's new, what's new, what's new, and we're turning beers out. We have a new beer every week currently, so it's even hard for me if I'm on a road that you come back and like, oh, what is this beer? I heard about that. So that, I think, the long tail getting longer, and then maybe more specific for Colorado, but I think for on the longer term, I think we could get some wacky wheat in our beers also.
Yeah, that is legal in the fine state of Colorado.
And you see, it is a trend that's now already, I think, D.C. also, or Washington, the legalization is happening, and I think there's very interesting aromas there.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we've got a double IPA out right now that smells pretty danky.
Mm-hmm. Also very dank.
Also very dank, as the kids like to say. Stephen, what do you think? What's the hot new trend, and are you following that, or do you think it'll be a flash in the pan?
No, I don't know what's that dank you guys talk about. I have no idea what you're talking about. That was joking. it's a very interesting trend there in Colorado. Well, I think we've seen IPAs for quite a while now, and now the flavored IPAs, and I think the only thing that I can see is that trends are becoming shorter and shorter and shorter. It's like Peter is saying, you know, we're not as crazy to throw one beer a week out. We're probably at about one a month, but it's still the velocity or speed that you bring these beers out. I mean, I don't know if that's sustainable for any of us as brewers.
Sure.
But there's so many small breweries that are, like you said, in Dallas County, there's 30, and I mean, they all are very creative, and that's one of the reasons why most people start in this industry, is because you can really express your creativity. So, you know, and there's some fantastic beers out there. Every time I travel, I go into a brewery, and I think, like, 10 years ago, you couldn't walk in a brewery, and it's like, well, good luck to you, and, I mean, hopefully you'll make it. But now I walk into a brewery, and like, wow, these beers are good. I mean, there might be one or two that are like, eh. There's some work to be done here, but the quality of the beers is just amazing. So if you add that, and then you add on top with all that creativity, I mean, I think it's just wide open. you know, I really don't have, I really don't, I mean, there's some trends that I think that could be happening, but, I mean, God, who knew that flavored IPAs would be the hot thing right now, you know? If you, somebody told me that a year ago, I would have said, like, I don't really understand what you're talking about, because that doesn't sound good to me, but now they are. Cocoa IPAs and fruit IPAs and oak-aged IPAs and, you know, just keep on going.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Probably would have told Peter if he told me that last year. I'm like, Peter, what the hell are you smoking? That's probably what I've just told him.
I think we all know what Peter's smoking. And that's why GABF will always be in Denver. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back with Peter and Steven to answer listener mail. But first, let's talk about anniversaries.
Let's do it.
We're going to be 4 years old.
So we can drink legally in Belgium.
So we can legally drink in Belgium. Man, what a change 4 years can bring. I can't wrap my head around it. So let's just talk about the party. So on the 30th, on July 30th, we're going to have a big party. We're going to have a big party at the brewery. Tickets will be on sale, and they will be available through Eventbrite.
Yeah, tickets are on sale right now. They are at lbcturns4.eventbrite.com.
For the number 4 or F-O-U-R?
The number 4, yeah. Okay. You'll be able to check our Facebook. You'll be able to check our website. We'll have all the details. Yeah, anniversary party, July 30th, from 12 o'clock to 9 o'clock. From 12 to 1, we are doing VIP tickets from 1 until 5. It's general admission. We're going to have a couple different time frames where people can get different tickets, so it's not just one big mass. And then at 5 o'clock, we're opening it up to the public, so anyone can come on in and join the party at that point. We're going to have live music throughout the day, food trucks. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it will be the debut of Lion Share 4.
We're going to have some amazing, amazing beers. We are going through the sour room and going through our barrel-aged room and pulling out all kinds of fun little goodies that we've been working on over the last year or two. And no anniversary party would be complete without having day two at Good Friend's Burger and Beer Garden. Is that what it is?
Good Friend Beer Garden and Burger House.
So we have Matt. We have Matt Tobin in the studio with us today.
Hey, everybody.
Matt, the founder and general
co-founder.
Co-founder.
Josh is working at Package Store this morning. So
he's not here.
He's not working.
He's not here.
He's working. He is. Yeah. I saw him.
Okay.
I watched him.
I seen him.
I seen it. Dry land is not a myth. So we have Matt Tobin in the studio, co-founder of Good Friends. Josh couldn't be here because he's actually working. At least that's the rumor. And so let's talk about our history together.
Yeah, let's do it.
We started in 2012, and we said, well, let's have a big coming out party. And we went and talked to Matt and Josh. They had just opened.
Yeah, we opened end of 2011.
And we said, hey, let's go do it over there. They got cool beer, and they got good burgers, and
They're cool.
They're generally okay. Yeah.
They're cool. They're in our neck of the woods.
We were close to you.
And it's really all about proximity.
That's really, that's
really all it was, because, you know, in case we needed to go get more beer, we didn't want to have to drive too far.
Yeah, which I think we did.
We did get more beer.
Yeah, we did have to go back and get more beer.
Oh, shit.
You can bring more, right? Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, okay. That was a great day.
Yeah.
The taps opened and they didn't close.
They did not stop.
No. And every year since, it's just been awesome. And we're going to keep it going.
So we keep going back. We keep going back. I don't know why.
I don't either.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think one of us would learn.
At some point.
Yeah.
Josh knows.
You guys are really difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
We're hard to work with.
Yeah.
I need a trailer.
Your rider is outrageous.
My rider is very demanding.
Bowl of M&Ms with all the green ones taken out. That
right.
Gets us every
put in
year.
The Super Bowl.
Right. That's right. We love going to Good Friends just because we get hungry.
It's amazing.
It's pretty tight. We just put out a new menu, too.
So. Yeah.
But that's not what we're here to plug.
No, the new menu is hot sauce.
It's all hot sauce.
Not all hot sauce.
It's all.
That was a euphemism, I think.
It's just the house of hot sauce now.
It's the house of hot sauce. It's really just one of those tchotchke shops that just sells 1,000 different hot sauces, like in the airport.
And knives.
Hot sauce and knives. Yeah. And taxidermied small alligators. That's really all it is. But they have great beer, too. So that's why we keep going back.
We do.
Yeah, we're going to have a busy day out there. We are looking forward to that. And then when is that going to be going on?
We open at 11 a.m.
11 a.m.
We're open till midnight.
So come on out to that. Come out to both. July 30th, day one party at the brewery. Sunday, July 31st at Good Friend.
Please.
Have fun.
It's going to be amazing. We're going to have amazing food, amazing music, and amazing beer at both locations, mm-hmm. both days.
Yeah, our beer lineup on the 31st is looking pretty good, too. Creepless. I mean, the ones from you guys. You know.
Oh, right.
Oh, good.
We're celebrating
okay,
gotcha. A few other breweries' anniversaries on that day, too. I didn't tell you guys about that yet, but that's you guys cool. don't need to know.
Hey, thanks so for fitness. Okay. Thanks for yeah. fitness in.
Hey, no, you know what? We're neighbors. It's good.
I appreciate it. So we have a little section on our podcast called Listener Mail. Listener Mail! Listener Mail!
No, again, no one,
it is time for Listener Mail.
No one told you to do that. That's an executive decision. That's for you, Wim.
It's the theme song.
Okay. Self-appointed.
Self-appointed theme song. We have our listeners and our followers on the Facebooks and on the Twitters and on the internets email us questions for the podcast. And we have a couple of questions. So, Zach, take it away.
All right, cool. So the first one we're actually fielding from our head brewer. Sean wanted to know for you gentlemen, for your sour beers, how often do you repitch your slurry? And what, if any, measures do you take to try to control the microbes in order to put out a consistent product?
Never.
Asked and answered. All right.
So you never repitch after a sour batch is done. Start fresh every time. Okay, that's an easy answer.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I think we do sometimes. It all depends on how it turns out. If it's not creating what you like it to create, then you just start from scratch again.
Sure.
But I couldn't tell you how many times a year that is, or every 2 years, or it all depends on how good the beer is.
Right. Of course. Okay. All right, next question.
Cool. Colin asks us, there's a lot of obsession in the American craft community with the idea of purity or legitimacy. Belgian brewing has this groundwork, you know, rich in devout and tradition, but U.S. brewers have made various riffs like Belgian IPAs and all these crazy additions to doubles, triples, and quads. Mm-hmm. Can beers outside of the tradition truly be Belgian? And have you ever had to deal with conceptions of legitimacy vis-a-vis your Belgian brewing bona fides?
So I guess the question is where is the line where you're crossing from a traditional Belgian beer to American bastardized version of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me start on that. We bastardized Fat Tire. We just were brewing with the guy from the Koning. And so that was one of the models for Fat Tire. Mm-hmm. An amber ale, and he had a beer. He just came in, and he had a beer before I finally met up with him. And he had this Fat Tire, and he's like, "Wow, this is fantastic! You guys dry hop that beer. That is so unique. I need to start doing that." So I would say it's not very authentic Belgian. You know, Fat Tire has a little bit of dry hop in there, and he was so surprised about that and thought it was really interesting.
Okay.
Is that an answer?
No, it is. No, I think it's a great answer because it is a fluid back and forth. It's a
continuum.
It is a continuum spectrum. Where Belgian brewers influence American brewers and vice versa. So, you know, I where is the line? There may just not be one.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, you know? Just because you use a Belgian yeast, is it immediately a Belgian beer, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah.
Kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be purists out there that mm-hmm. say that, you know, only Belgian breweries can make
right.
Belgian triples.
Mm-hmm.
But I always refer back to Fat Tire in my eyes. It's the best Belgian-style beer we make, and I do that because people think if it's Belgian, it needs to be sour, funky, or high in alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that's absolutely untrue. There are sours, and there is high alcohol, and there's a few funky beers, but there's way more funky beers here, so people call it Belgian because it's funky, really? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was always the trick when you went to, and you were doing a homebrew competition, and the guys, or people were making a beer, and it started going a little sideways. Oh, let's just put in a Belgian category. Maybe I'll win a medal that way. I mean, that was always the deal, right, in the 90s.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think Peter is right. There's way more funky beer than there are here that are in Belgium. I'm somewhat regretting being one of the first ones to put Brettanomyces in our saison and call it Saison Brett. And I was like, if you have a saison somewhere and there's no bread in it, people go like, well, that's not a true saison. They should have bread in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hello. I mean, a lot of saisons in Belgium are basically amber ales or brown ales, and they're 5% alcohol and overspiced or no spiced,
mm-hmm.
or they're really pale and, you know, very high carbonated. I mean, it's just like it's a category catch-all, I guess. I think Peter is really great also when it talks about Fat Tire. I think it just shows the crab beer movement in the U.S. that we take a Belgian beer and we just do whatever we want with it. And do we still call it Belgian? No, we don't. We just call it whatever it is. And who cares if it's Belgian or not Belgian? I mean, Tank 7, we call it Saison Wood. We could have called it a Belgian IPA, or we could have called it something else also. It just tasted good. It just came out the way we wanted it. And, you know, and that's how we make beer here. We just try to make flavors. Mm-hmm. I think we're in the flavor-making business. That's what we do. And whether it fits a category or not, who cares? We're just trying to make good beer.
I like that. I'm going to put that on a T-shirt.
Yeah, that's a good sound bite.
We're in the flavor-making business.
Hey, I'm going to charge you for that one.
That's fine. That's fine. That's totally cool.
We pay royalties.
We'll pay royalties on the T-shirts.
You didn't see the R at the end of that quote? You didn't see that?
Oh, dang. Oh, I'm sorry. You're breaking up. I can't hear you anymore. You're going into a tunnel.
Yeah, trademark.
Cool. Okay, I'll let you guys get on with your very, very busy days. Thank you so much, Peter Bokart from New Belgium and Stephen Powles from Boulevard Brewing, for dialing in and chatting with us today. You guys are a major influence, not just on me, but I think on a lot of brewers that have started up, you know, in the last 20 years. It's a testament to what you guys do and the passion that you guys have for brewing and for the industry. So thank you guys so much for making time for our humble little podcast this morning, and we hope to share a beer with you next time you're in town.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having us.
So that wraps it up for us today for our third iteration of Taproom Talks. Thank you to Stephen Powles. Thank you to Peter Bokart.
Yes.
And Bukart. Thank you to Matt Tobin.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you, Zach.
Happy to be here, Wim.
Thanks, Zach.
Long time, first time.
Thanks, Craig.
No.
Good night, Ned.
Good night, Ned.
Good night.
Good night, Moon.
And I won't stop until I'm dead.
I was thinking about doing a funny intro.
Cool. That's good.
Sure. So I'm just going to start speaking gibberish in Flemish, and then you guys just cut me off.
Okay.
I need to think about what I'm going to say.
It's a little harder to gibber than
yeah,
you
it's
think.
It's a little harder to jibber-jabber. Goedemorgen en welkom aan Taproom Talks. Ik ben Wim Bens van Lakewood Brewing Company. Okay, let's try that. You guys got to cut in a little bit quicker.
I was going to see how far you went with this.
I just love the sound of your voice.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
I know.